from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer. From the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week. I'm speaking with artist Dana Matthews.
I'll show you one of my installations that I made in there. But I also do a lot of painting, and I do a lot of, you call it hand coloring. It's tinting, which is sort of the same method they used in the 20s, by putting oil paint on top of a sepia-toned photograph. Like, for example, here I drew the animals in, silhouetted with black India ink. This picture was made in Morocco in the Sahara. And I like to travel, and I travel to take photographs, basically, into places that feel very spiritual, which, you know, is usually very natural landscapes, such as this one, the desert. This is a triptych, so I hand-painted. It took me, like, forever to do this piece, but I named it Desertification because of, you know, that's basically what it is. This, what you're looking at, this barren landscape, used to be a jungle. They used to have lakes, and all of these animals that I've painted, you can't see the third panel, it's in a box, but they used to live and thrive in this environment, which you're looking at now, which is all sand and scrub, you know, and rocky. This is in Morocco.
In Morocco, and the animals you're describing, there's a giraffe, an elephant, an antelope, a rhinoceros, a gazelle, and they're at the bottom of these pieces.
Changing, man changing the landscape from a thriving, vegetative, green space to a desert. So it was basically over-farmed, overworked, and this is the result. And it's growing. It's one of the largest deserts in the world, and it's still growing.
It's growing, and these animals, so they're almost, they're ghosts, right? They were once there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they no longer can. Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. I'm speaking with artist Dana Matthews. Hello.
Hi.
And I'm at her studio in Brooklyn, in Gowanus, Brooklyn. And there is a super fun site, the Gowanus Canal, just a stone's throw away. And I think that's also relevant to mention because of the work that you're engaged with here, which is about the natural landscape. It's about the environment. It's about what once was, what could happen if certain things occur with humanity and actions. Entering your studio, there's a no frack sticker on your studio door, and immediately upon entering, I'm seeing photographs of farmers, and we're going to talk about that, farmers in upstate New York. I'm seeing wildlife and pieces of bark and tree trunks and animals in your office space. And then as we walk into your studio, I mean, there are plants everywhere growing and the sunlight streaming through the door, but I'm seeing cases, an aquarium of seashells, and I'm seeing skulls and a bird head right here, a bird's head of some kind, and bones, and, you know, so it's also this incredible space. I mean, these big tree trunks here in the center of your studio, and photographs of the land, of the natural world, from trees to snow areas. So I'll have you describe some things, but Dana, I'd love to know how you became interested and began to focus on the environment and the natural landscape and animals and this sort of thing.
I grew up in the country. I grew up on a farm in Alabama. So I was always surrounded by nature. And my best friend was my horse. And my next best friend was the woods. You know, I had this special area of earth, which we called it earth. We named it Chinese Gardens. It was full of these giant stones and a babbling brook that ran through the middle of it. And it was an old growth forest is what it was. I didn't have the language for that when I was young, but we gravitated to that spot and we would just play in there with moss. It was just, the moss was, you know, 6-8 inches thick. It was like a fairyland. And so that became like a very magical and life-changing place for me. And then when I was in graduate school at RISD, I returned one Christmas to find that it had been completely clear-cut, now there's they put a farm up there, actually, a cattle farm. So, and that's what they're doing. That's one of the reasons I'm attracted to rainforest. When I was photographing in the rainforest in Costa Rica, we were getting closer. As we were approaching the virgin rainforest in the Osa Peninsula, we traveled through all these ranches to begin with. And slowly the ranches began to disappear and the jungle started to take over. You know, it was a very gradual. And then we were just in the jungle, you know, and it was completely thick and amazing animals and unbelievable amount of diversity, you know, in the animal life and the plant life there. But just before getting to the jungle was ranch land with cows. You know, I just sort of just made that connection just now. Like this piece is an installation that it's called The Reign of Medusa. Medusa meaning jellyfish. I was really focused on the acidification of the ocean due to global warming and what was happening to the creatures, the sea creatures. And as a result of a lot of reading I did about acidification, one of the results of having too much acid in the water is the bone density of fish break down. And so what you end up with is jellyfish, a lot of jellyfish, a lot of invertebrates. And so I started trying to imagine what our ocean would be like without fish with bones, you know, going back to the beginning again, so to speak, with, you know, people say that we began as a jellyfish, you know. So that's what this piece is about.
And when did you make this piece? So this is an installation, and we'll describe it a little bit, but when did you make it?
I made this piece about 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 or 3 years ago.
And was this, you said it was in response to hearing about the acidification of the ocean, the pollution of the ocean, and what was your response to the oil spill, the big BP spill? I mean, did that impact your work on oceans?
This piece I was making before the oil spill. I haven't processed that yet. It takes a while. In fact, my mother lives right near where the oil spill was happening, and their response to it was very surprising. They, like, her community, they were almost in denial. Like, everything's okay, nothing's happening, our water's fine, the beaches are beautiful, kind of thing. And I haven't processed it all yet. I have 3 magnifying glasses, and this is my attempt to invite the viewer to be active with the piece. It's not set up properly at the moment, but behind each magnifying glass is an old photograph, an actual old photograph from the 20s of fishermen holding up a string of fish that they've caught. And the fish are huge. The fish are bigger than they are. So that's one photograph. And then I have in the middle is another magnifying glass, which is actually from an enlarger, a photographic enlarger, with fish on a string behind that. And the same thing with this one. There are women holding a string of fish there and men holding, you know, so they've been on a big fishing trip. And, you know, that's sort of a comment on how, you know, like I take my son fishing now and we catch like a tiny little 2-inch fish. And the fish are getting much smaller. A lot of the older fish are gone. We don't catch old fish anymore. They're just non-existent.
And then the jars of jellyfish on the lower shelf of this structure. 4 jars with the jellyfish. And then there are these, like a tree, like a fungus, right? Aren't these that are on dead trees?
Yeah, that's a mushroom. It's actually edible. You could boil these.
That's a mushroom?
Yeah, these are mushrooms. They grow, you know, on dead trees. But I like the way that they're shaped like ears. And so it's kind of a metaphor for not really hearing, you're not paying attention, or maybe you are paying attention. It's just like, you know how we put our ear up to a shell and we hear the ocean? And these are thermometers. I have 3 thermometers. They're also old. I love older objects. And all these objects are found objects. So I either made it or found it or just recycled it. These thermometers hang from the top shelf between the jars of jellyfish. They represent temperature, the increasing temperature of the ocean.
And the increasing temperature of the planet. And, oh, what is the name of this piece?
The Reign of Medusa.
The Reign of Medusa. Well, thank you for showing me that. Because as we're talking about the temperature of the oceans, the acidification, the temperature that's increasing in the planet, and I'm looking around and I see a body of water here. Could we talk about this photograph of yours?
Sure. That's Pete's Pond. I did a series of photographs of Pete's Pond. It's in the Catskills. It's not far from my log cabin. I visited it several times, photographed it in moonlight, in all seasons, during an ice thaw. And this one, it's dead of winter. It's covered in snow and ice. I'm very attracted to contained bodies of water like that, especially ponds. I think they're just... they just have this transcendent quality. You know, people go and they sit and they stare at water, and you know, it's magical to me, especially this pond in particular. I'll show you the other.
We're walking into the front room of Dana's studio now.
This is the same pond in the summer. Probably, I think I took this in August, and this is moonlight. This is full moon, and you see how it changes.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
And it's full. It seems like it's just about to spill over the edge.
And a different season. That other one was snow, winter time, and this,
this is summer.
Summer, so yeah. Completely different colors and appearance. Wow, that's... Oh, it's beautiful with the reflection of the moon into the body of water, into Pete's Pond, and the Catskills in the background, right? The hills
yep.
and mountains of the Catskills.
We'll be working on the cultivation.
So that brings us to upstate New York, where you do have a cabin in Franklin, and you're doing a series of photographs on farmers and farms. What began this project for you, and what are you discovering, and who are some of these farmers, and where are they located?
I've photographed at several farms, but the farm that I've returned to most often is Lucky Dog Farm in Hamden. Richard Giles runs the farm, and we grew up together. We went to the University of Alabama together and met there. We were actually both photographers at the time, and he was a writer. He's a writer, and he was also photographing. He was doing a lot of writing about Hale County, Alabama, and I was actually photographing in Hale County, Alabama, some of the sharecropper farms, the same ones that Walker Evans photographed mm-hmm. and James Agee wrote about. So that's sort of where this project began, although we didn't know it at the time. And then I moved to New York, and then Richard also moved to New York a little while after me. From New York, we migrated upstate together. We're like, okay, we've got to get back to, like, the dirt. And he wanted to get back to farming, and I wanted just to be in the country and so I could write and create and work. So he started this farm, and it was just natural. It was just so natural for me to be photographing his farm, and from photographing his farm, I branched out to other farms. I'd also photographed my grandmother extensively on her farm. I mean, she was still farming in her 80s.
And this is in Alabama. What town?
St. Clanton, Alabama. I have photographs of her on her tractor, you know, at the age of 80. She's no longer doing it now.
So I see both black and white and color photographs, and they are what size?
These are exhibition size. They're 20 by 24. I have had a couple of shows of the farm work, so I printed up some large exhibition size. I have a smaller portfolio of 8 by 10s. I've collected about 50 images that I really like. It's been a 5-year project so far, and we're still working on it.
And so this top photograph, then, if you could share with me, what farm is that, and who are they, and what are they growing, and is this all in Delaware County in upstate New York?
Yeah, these are all in Hamden. All these that we're looking at now are in Hamden at Lucky Dog Farm. I set up a backdrop in the greenhouse, and I made portraits of the farm workers, Elise, Danielle, Kaylin, Ashley. People love these two portraits. They've been on some covers of magazines, and there's also people that find them very offensive. So because they're wearing bikini tops, I don't get that.
Well, one wouldn't think of farming in a bikini top, but it makes sense if it's a hot day, right?
It makes total sense. I mean, I love it. I mean, why wear a shirt when you don't have to? This is a portrait of Richard and his two children. I guess you can tell from the photographs, especially these two and that one, that children are always around and family is such an important part of farming. I mean, your family is always around you, at least in the farms I've been to. Mm-hmm. There's always been children and family members. It's like a group effort, and you can really see that in the photographs, I think.
And Dana, we began speaking about your work that is from Morocco, and it's the Saharan Desert, and it's the animals that disappeared from there, a place that became inhospitable for wildlife and for much life at all. These are barren landscapes, something that was lush and had a large ecosystem and no longer does. Now we're talking about farmers and farmland in upstate New York in Delaware County. And to me, there's a big connection. And looking at these, it just occurred to me, looking at these farmers on this very fertile land growing food, growing produce for their communities, that they could become like the animals just in these other pieces in your studio that can no longer survive, can no longer have an existence in that particular environmental landscape. So is there a connection for you? Because we were talking about your installation piece about the acidification of the oceans and a loss of life and increasing temperatures. So you're very much, it seems that a portion of your work is that contemplation of what was and what we're facing and what could become. Is there a connection for you in these photographs and this body of work about farmers in upstate New York?
Well, there wasn't until now. That's very true. It's very insightful for you to point that out. I began this work before I was aware of drilling, and I visited Morocco before I was aware. I mean, when I was traveling through that desert landscape, I was loving it. But it never occurred to me when I was there that it was once a jungle, you know. And then I returned and I did a lot of reading, and I thought, wow. I just couldn't believe it. And I knew a lot of people don't know that. They think deserts are natural. And maybe some of them are, but a lot of them, like this one in particular, is man-made. Just the thought of drilling, you know, contaminating the soil and the water and the air and shutting down these farms and that produce food is a dreadful thought. I mean, I just read somewhere that a couple of grocery stores and also the Park Slope Food Co-op says they're not going to sell food. They're not going to continue to buy food from farms that are near drilling sites. People should really hear that loud and clear. I mean, that says a lot.
What do you call it, this farm work?
I call it farm work.
Oh, you call it farm work. Okay.
We are trying to publish a book. Richard and I, he's done a lot of writing, farm writing. It's really revealing of what it means to grow up and live on a farm.
And Dana, you mentioned spirituality, I believe, or some in the beginning of our conversation, a certain kind of contemplation about your work? Is that something that you talk about with your work, or is that something more internal in regards to your process or how you might define your work?
It's definitely internal, but my hope is that it is projected onto, it lives in the work, and then from the work, it moves into the viewer. That's one of the reasons I like to print very large. This is as large as I can print, 40 by 40. And oftentimes, I make diptychs and triptychs to put three 40 by 40 images together so that you're confronted with this very large experience. It's just not an object anymore. You know, the smaller prints, they're more like objects. But when you print large like this, or I create a large installation that you have to walk into and you interact with and you experience, then I think the spiritual element of the pieces really comes through. And it's not, my hope would be that you're not aware that you're looking at a photograph and at a work of art, but you're in the place and you're feeling the energy of the place.
I'm going to walk into the other room of your studio right now so I can look around a little bit more. Dana, thank you so much for sharing all of this. What it makes me think of is, because I'm seeing a large portion. Now, this, of course, is only the work that you have up that I'm getting to see right now, but our landscapes are without people. They have animals or bees or insects. But then the farm work series, of course, is their photographs of farmers. Would you say that your work is really equal with people and no people as subjects? Or is there something that you're trying to move us to? Or, I mean, I'm just curious about, you know, I'm seeing, are these rainforest photographs?
Yes.
Some of them, and...
Most of these are rainforest. That's upstate New York, another pond site. That's a volcano, the Sipsey Swamp in Alabama.
Are you exploring the relationship between people and their environment, or to you, are they one and the same, or is there something that you yourself are either documenting or exploring or trying to communicate? I mean, if you can share a little bit about the work. Looking around, I immediately get, this is the natural world, and there is an exploration into, I guess that's my question, you know, since I'm just seeing your work for the first time.
I would say that the farm work is very much about people. It's very much about the hand of the farmer. The food comes from the hand of the farmer. The food is handled by their hands, packaged by their hands, sold by their hands, and then of course it ends up in our hands and we eat it with our hands. So it's, the hand is connected to people and to the body. It's very much about work, the farmland, and it's very connected to people. These prints that we're looking at now, the rainforest and other landscapes, the ponds and the oceans, they're very absent of people. And I think that's a very conscious action on my part. I want the land to speak, and the land is what speaks to me in these photographs. The inclusion of a person would just change the photograph entirely and would change the spiritual connection to the land, I believe. Because in a lot of ways, mankind, womankind, they've caused a lot of harm to the world, you know, and to these environments. But they're also responsible for saving and preserving these places as well, you know. So I just like to sort of erase that element entirely, just so that you can have a direct connection to the landscape, to the earth, just that direct connection. There's nothing in between.
Incredible. I love these insects that you have painted over some of the photographs. What is this insect and where are we? What am I looking at in this photograph? I mean, I see a massive tree and you shot from below, so we're looking up towards the sky. And there's, on the left of this photograph, is a very large winged insect.
This is actually a ficus, a huge, large, it's giant. I mean, they tend to take over the forest in the rainforest in particular. They reach out and they're called strangler figs. They just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And just to the left of it is a hawk moth that I've drawn. And this is not finished yet, so I intend to draw more insects.
And is the hawk moth, it lives in this environment?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So it's of the location. I know, I just love these paintings of the insects over this. So let's see, oh, they're great. So let's talk about these two pieces of yours.
This is a beetle that I've drawn in the middle of three trees with also some pencil drawing. I like to sort of open the dialogue between inside and outside. So when you're looking at a tree, you see basically the bark, the trunk of the tree, the shape. The external part of the tree is what you're actually looking at, but I want you to think more about the inside of the tree. So in order to do that, I make these drawings of the vascular cambium. I'm studying horticulture at the moment, so I've been studying the biology of the tree, like how it drinks, how it eats, how it grows. So these pencil drawings sort of illustrate the life of the tree from the inside. These are bacteria. It's a wheat rust.
A wheat rust. And what is
this? Keeper. It's
keeper.
Yeah, it's an Egyptian word.
Your pieces that very much engage with our natural landscape and the environment and bodies of water and contained bodies of water.
What I hope to do with my landscapes is to change people's relationship to nature, to change their relationship psychologically to nature by looking at nature as a subject rather than an object.
Thank you so much, Dana. I've been speaking with Dana Matthews, who is an artist, and we are at her studio in Brooklyn, New York, in Gowanus. And I'm walking around her studio right now. It's just filled with so many incredible objects that have me thinking about my own relationship to the natural world, to the environment, to a history. These objects connected to our past. I'm looking at these large tree trunks and to also thinking and studying because of glass jars and magnifying glasses and perspective and the way we look at things. And Dana has been sharing her work with me is called Farm Work. And it's photographs of farmers in upstate New York. From the kitchen table out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artel. To find out more about Dana Matthews and her work, please go to danamatthews.com. Donations to support Trailer Talk are always gratefully received. You can find a link to make your tax-deductible donation at trailertalk.net. Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artel. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artel. Safe travels.
Caregiving for a loved one can be stressful. The Caregiver Resource Center is here to help, offering information and referrals, support groups, and workshops. A co-partnership between Cornell Cooperative Extension and the Office for the Aging of Sullivan County, the center also offers exercise and educational programs for seniors. Information at sullivancce.org/events. Supported by a grant from the New York State Department of Health and the Alzheimer's Association.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear the savage and sensuous bongos, also the traveling Wilburys of exotica music, the Surfmen, plus some TV private eye jazz. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour.
Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
On the next Radiolab...
Should we just go now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
A sort of...
We're giving consent for this procedure.
I am giving consent.
Organ...
Here comes the big needle.
...inside the human body that scientists had...
Whoa, there it is.
...completely missed.
So is that it? Are we looking at it right now?
That's it.
Even though it had always been sitting there in plain sight inside of all of us. That's on the next Radiolab. Wednesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill.
Local news, culture, and NPR.